The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hunco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hunco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the DC movement should be referred to Hunco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hunco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
It is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
flee. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
All right. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world. And welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together each week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. They don't get any fresher than they could possibly get tonight, folks. It's just unbelievable. We are on the eve of the ejection election of 2010. Hello, everybody. My name is Mark Belcher. I'll be your host for the next hour. And hey, hello there, Silver Fox. Good old friend of mine. Stopped into the room here tonight. Haven't seen you around for a while. And say hello to everybody out there in Politics Lobby 4, Patriots Unite Voice Room. It's, folks, we are on the eve of a historic occasion. There's going to be a lot happening here over the next week or two. And a lot happening over the next couple of years. At least this is what we're hoping. This is the ejection election. You got it, baby. It's coming down where we change out the business-as-usual politics in Washington, D.C. The conglomeration of business and government, the fascism that has been going on for the last 4 years under the democratically-led Congress, now with a Democrat in the White House, has turned into unbelievable measures. And see if we can turn it around. See if we can make sense out of all of this. See if we can take this country back to its constitutional roots. See if we can put the federal government back into the position that it is constitutionally mandated to do. Get it out of all of the positions that are unconstitutional. And, let the states have some of their sovereignty back. You know, let the people have some of their freedom back. It's time once again. It's time to make that decision between tyranny and liberty. People say, what do you mean tyranny? What are you talking about here? Let me tell you something. You know, there is such a thing as a tyranny of the masses. And this is in a democracy where everybody gets a chance to vote on every single little issue that goes on out there. And let's face it here, sometimes our government acts in much the same way. People get too many representatives that want them to do just that. You get a license to kill. Give them a license to kill, you give them a license to steal, you give them a license basically to rain horror down on everybody. And that was one of the things that our federal government was never supposed to do. You know, way back when we were discussing this federal government, but it was thought of that something had to come along after Shay's Rebellion. We figured, you know, we either get a constitution for this country or we watch this country wash itself down the tubes, because the Articles of Confederation just weren't holding it all together. We had a long debate in this country. We had a very long debate, about 2 years worth. And the debate had basically taken up two sides. There were those that called themselves the Federalists, led on by the likes of Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and one other name that'll come up to me here really quick, and the likes of what they call the Anti-Federalists, who were mostly anonymous people who who at the time, even in the age of muskets, bows, arrows, knives, and whatnot for weapons, were still feared for their lives. You know, did not want to print their name in the paper for fear of the retribution that may come their way in the middle of the night. And these guys had said right back then that they did not want to replace the tyranny of England with a tyranny of our own making. Even Thomas Paine had said that, you know, when we have a government that we are suffering under, and we are suffering in much the same way as we would suffer as a country that didn't have a government, well, you know, our displeasure is doubled, because we understand that at that point in time we furnished the means of our own unhappiness. And that's basically what's coming up here. This is what we're finding out. You know, a lot of people were looking at the 2008 election as a free ride into the next century. Things are going to be taken care of. You're going to be able to get health care. Everybody's going to have a job. Everybody's going to have enough. We're going to spread the wealth. And all this by people who had no idea what wealth is. How wealth is created, how wealth is consumed, how wealth is, how wealth has to be constantly created, or it cannot be constantly consumed. You know, by people who just don't understand the economics of reality. Now, this is all going to change. This is why we're having a huge election tomorrow, why the Democrats are looking and running scared at this point in time. Now, folks, make no mistake about it. A couple weeks ago, I had made the comment on here that I did not think this was going to be over easy. And there is a, and I sure as hell, there's an article out here tonight on the AP by Brett J. Blackledge that states much the same thing. The campaign for some candidates won't end with Tuesday's election and could be taken over by lawyers who already are preparing for possible recount battles. The large number of too-close-to-call congressional races in states like Colorado, Nevada, Illinois, and West Virginia has some observers predicting more contested elections than recounts this year. At the very least, a slow count of ballots in states like Washington and Alaska is expected to keep many voters in suspense. Now, I'm sure Democrats will say the same thing, but Republican campaigns are prepared for the reality that many of their races will not be decided on Election Day, said Paul Lindsay, a National Republican Congressional Committee spokesman. The fact has prompted both parties to place their best legal minds on alert, and, in some cases, to mobilize days in advance of where reports have surfaced of pre-election problems. Hundreds of lawyers are ready to pounce on any claims of voter fraud, machine malfunctions, and polling place disruptions. Now, we're focused on making sure that doesn't happen on Election Day, said Deidre Murphy, a Democratic Senate Campaign Committee spokeswoman, said. This happens every election cycle, the threat of dramatic recount struggles. But Florida's 36-day recount fight in 2000, which left the nation wondering who would be its next president, forever changed how vote challenges are viewed. Nothing is unheard of, and everything is possible. It took 8 months to formally declare Democrat Al Franken the winner after the Minnesota's 2008 Senate election. Lawyers across the country have already chased down reports of irregularities, part of a pre-election ritual that fueled by partisans who are concerned their candidates will suffer from voter and ballot fraud. Consider claims in Nevada of electronic voting machines that automatically recorded votes for a candidate when tested. Phony absentee ballots mailed to some Pennsylvania voters with the wrong return address, and armies of volunteers in Wisconsin vowing to keep away those trying to vote who aren't properly registered. The overwhelming number of them turn out to not be true, said Ben Ginsburg, a Washington lawyer who helped form, who helped Republican Norm Coleman's campaign in 2008 bid against Franken, and a key non-member of Bush's Florida legal team in 2000. I think you're ever vigilant about these sorts of issues, Ginsburg said. But he admits that a lot of lawyers tend to get over-caffeinated at this time of year. The big problems don't usually surface until there are razor-thin races. There are many prospects for those this year, if polling is to be believed. 8 states have candidates in House and Senate races who are running nearly even going into tomorrow's election, including Nevada, where Republican Sharron Angle threatens Senate Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid. If candidates in those and other tight races don't win convincingly, the focus will shift after Tuesday to how votes are counted and how provisional and absentee ballots will affect the races. New York voters were already expecting problems thanks to new electronic voting machines that proved less than reliable in the September primary, which New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called a royal screw-up. If elections come down to a few hundred votes, problems with voting machines, absentee ballots, and challenges made against voters with registration could make a big difference, said Wendy Weiser, a lawyer with the Brennan Center for Justice in New York. This group had has joined others in the Election Protection Coalition to help voters handle Election Day problems, including what to do if there are problems with machines or challenges to a voter's registration. Partisan groups and even television networks have set up hotlines to monitor voting problems, including voter registration challenges. There are even iPhone applications that allow voters and polling observers to upload photos of irregularities. More states have turned to electronic voting machines to help simplify casting a ballot. But the election process still varies state by state, and there is no consistent method to handle vote challenges and recounts, all of which make for big business for election lawyers. A decade after a presidential election boiled down to ballots with hanging chads in Florida and confusion over what votes to count, the country's election process still leaves a lot to be desired. Well, he's about right there. But folks, imagine some of what could happen out of all this. And I'm thinking, there's some craziness. No doubt about it here. You know, now, just suppose half of these elections are contested. Now, suppose the number goes that high where half of these elections end up being contested. And it takes 8 months. Well, what are they going to do? Shut down the government? You know, are they going to put off seating anyone who has been newly elected until it's all straightened out? I mean, if the incumbents are allowed to do that, well, then what? You know, what is to spur them on to ever coming to a decision? You know, it's what's to spur them to ever coming to any decision whatsoever? If all of a sudden they find themselves in a position where, hey, you know, we could just hold this off because the people haven't made up their minds, so we can sit right here as long as we want to. And if they don't want to make up their mind, well, we'll help them not make up their mind. I don't know, folks. I think it's an ugly situation any way you look at it. Not very pretty at all. All right, now, folks, you guys out there in a politics lobby for Patriots Volunteer or Patriots Unite Voice Room, if you know anybody wants to speak up here tonight, feel free to raise your hand. More than willing to listen to anything, any comments, questions, whatever you have. If not, we got plenty of news going on here. All right, next one up on the list here, we got mail bombs tonight, folks. This evidently seems to be four times larger than the Christmas plot. This by Geir Moulson and Matt Apuccio from the Associated Press. A little while before the show started tonight. Which, by the way, all articles read on this program for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. Al-Qaeda's top bomb maker raised his game, officials believe, by following his miss on a crowded U.S.-bound passenger jet last Christmas with four times more explosives packed into bombs hidden last week on flights from Yemen. Now, the two bombs contained 300 and 400 grams of the industrial explosive PETN, according to a German security official who briefed reporters Monday in Berlin on condition of anonymity, in line with department guidelines. By comparison, the bombs stuffed into a terrorist suspect's underwear in the Detroit-bound plane contained about 80 grams. Early forensics on the two bombs packed inside computer printer cartridges point to Ibrahim al-Asiri, the master bomb maker for the Yemen-based group known as Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. It shows that they are trying to make different types of adaptations based on what we have put in place, said John Brennan, President Barack Obama's counterterrorism advisor. So the underwear bomber, as well as these packages, are showing sort of new technique on their part. They're very innovative and creative. Now, Al-Qaeda's propaganda machine remained unusually silent about the attacks Monday as U.S. counterterrorism officials looked for new ways to root out the Yemen-based group. Its members number about 300 people hidden in an area of rugged desert twice the size of Wyoming. U.S. counterterrorism teams headed for Yemen to hunt for suspects in a plot that revealed its security gaps in the worldwide shipping network and reminded the West that Al-Qaeda was constantly looking to exploit those gaps. Now, with the U.S. already deeply involved in Yemen's fight against terrorism, it was not immediately obvious how to effectively increase military and intelligence efforts in an impoverished country. The U.S. and its allies Monday further tightened scrutiny of shipments from Yemen. U.S. counterterrorism officials warned police and emergency personnel to be on watch for mail with characteristics that could mean dangerous substances are hidden inside. And Germany's aviation authority extends its ban on air cargo from Yemen to include passenger flights. Britain banned the import of larger printer cartridges by air on Monday as it also announced broader measures to halt air cargo from Yemen and Somalia following the ink cartridge bomb plot. Well, that makes a little more sense there, doesn't it? Now, this article goes on and on, but look, folks, you know, what's the main theme here? Al-Qaeda is still alive, still out there, still plotting revenge, still wanting to take over the country, still wanting to do all it can to disrupt everything it possibly can everywhere. There's more about this. I mean, there's, I don't know if it was, let me take a fast look here. But we've already, we're making hints to the Yemenis that we're willing to do, to the Yemeni government, that we're willing to help them in any way possible for them to stop this Al-Qaeda movement that's going on inside of Yemen. And it's not a pretty scene that's going on over there. You know, why should 300 people in a small country be allowed? To get away with this, you know. Now, let's face it. How much money do you need to go out there and go do this? Look, we're printing money like it's going out of style right now. Why bother? If we could ship some of it over there and have them stop it without us sending people in, well, that would be nice. But problem here is, you know, we're sending people in there anyway. We will see. We will see. Obviously, nothing. And I did take a little look around the international news area here to see whether the Yemenis were opposed to us coming in and doing anything about it. And apparently, they are not. There isn't a damn thing about it. All right. Well, let's keep on rolling here. I got some other news here. Now, folks, I was going to get into a little bit about local politics here in Massachusetts. You Massachusetts voters, all I can say is, look, go out there and vote your conscience tomorrow. If you think Deval Patrick is your man, you go vote for him. Personally, I will be voting for Mr. Baker. You know, I'm going right for the Republican. I don't think it's going to matter much one way or another. I think a lot of the congressional seats and the congressional races around here are so up in the air. I will say this. Thoroughly investigate whoever it is that you're looking to do. You know, think party. Because I'm here to tell you, folks, that a lot of people out there, you got to watch them. You got to go and take a look. All right? Unless they tell you, instead of tell you that they are actual Republicans, beware. The independents out there, a lot of Democrats posing as independents. Same for quite a few Republicans. Point of the matter is here, you know, that both of the parties have fallen out of such favor, you know, with the American people at this point in time, that these candidates are terribly reluctant to announce which party they are standing with. And I find this to be rather curious. You know, why wouldn't you want to tell us you were a Republican? Why wouldn't you want to tell us you're a Democrat? I was traveled down through Connecticut the other day. Had a radio one on the way down. I heard a lot of very convincing radio news ads for Linda McMahon run for state senate. Now, Linda McMahon is the wife of the president, the guy that owns the WWE, the Worldwide Wrestling, World Wrestling, whatever it is. At any rate, very successful guy. And she's loaded. And she just came right out and said, look, I am running for the Senate from the state of Connecticut. I am not going to take a salary. I will not going to take any of the benefits there, not their health care. I have my own health care plan. I have my own retirement plans, and I will not be accepting it from them. And curious to see how she's going to get away with that. That's because it's a, I don't know, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, if you're not taking the pay for the job, can you really be considered the person that is doing the job? It's a tough call here. But, well, we'll see how she works out with that. At any rate, I mean, it's a very convincing article, and I would fully expect her to win. I mean, she just made too much sense in every single one of the advertisements that I had heard for her. But the one thing I got to admit, on top of all of it, Linda never came out and said in any of her advertisements which party she was standing on. You know, I'm looking at everything that I saw up and down the streets around here. Deval Patrick, doesn't say Democrat for governor, just says Deval Patrick, Tim Murray, governor. Unbelievable, you know. Not even, you know, is he disowning his own party? Who's to say, you know? But it seems to me that, you know, the one thing that I've been hoping for forever, and that people cast aside the party, start voting the person, start voting the issue, start thinking about what it is that you really want from your governments. You know, and you got to think different things from your local governments and your federal government. You know, for me, the federal government is out there to do just a few things, you know. Look, Navy, strong Marines, good Coast Guard. I want them involved in some roads, and I want them to figure out how to pay for the roads or how to make the roads pay for themselves, which is basically what they've done. I like the idea of them forming a post office. That's constitutionally mandated. You know? And the fact that the post office has to get bailed out every now and then, well, you know, but hey, still the post office is doing its damnedest to compete as its own entity. And if you got to bail it out, post office has always been a communication system that's been necessary when all else fails. So let's face it, that's not a bad idea. You know, even if it costs a little bit of bailout. That's one of the ones that I'm willing to go along with. You know, there are a few other things out there, but there's many, many things the federal government is not designed to do. The Department of Education. All you liberals out there and all you intellectual elites who are sitting there gasping for air right now when you hear me say something like this, well, you can just go pound sand. And the way I look at it, education is something that needs to be kept on the local level. That is where it needs to be kept because that is where it's going to have the most effect. The industries and trades and whatnot that happen in your area should be the ones that are contributing to your education. And they should be contributing to education that is good for their industries and their trades. That's the way I see it. You know, I'm personally all against any funding for anything over the 10th grade. You know, even, well, and it had to be, if you wanted me to compromise, I might compromise the senior year of high school. But beyond it, that's it. You know, and even that public education should be funded strictly on the local level with no mandates whatsoever from the federal government. Now, if the state wants to get involved with it, well, I'll go and argue with the state. I got no problem arguing with the state. But to go and argue against all the miscreants in Washington who are trying to set up one homogenous system for every single place in this country, for a country that is as large as our country, that is as diverse as our country, that has so many different means of doing things and so many different ways of making a living, you know, of moving forward, of challenging technology, of challenging life on Earth. I'm sorry, that has to get back down to the local level. You know, this is where the 10th Amendment needs to apply. This is where the 9th Amendment needs to apply, where powers not delegated strictly and outlined in that Constitution are retained by the people, are retained by the states. Yeah, absolutely, Bob. 9th grade, that's it. You know, beyond that, I think industry should be paying for it. And academia should find some way to fund itself other than the federal government, other than a federally backed loan program. I find it just so ridiculous that there are so many people out there with useless degrees. You know, to me, that is money wasted. You know, you can't count. I tell you, this town that I live in has 75 plus restaurants, and more than half of the wait staff, and more than half of the cook staff, what have you know, the people that work these restaurants have got degrees in something. You know, $100,000 for a college degree on average nowadays. And it's $100,000 just blown down the tubes. And the worst part about it is these kids still owe that $100,000, you know, plus all the interest on it that they're going to be paying over the next 10, 15, 20 years. You know, I'm sorry, but it's a waste, and it does nothing more than spread the damn liberal propaganda machine. And that's all it's been doing right along here. You know, these poor kids come out and then they vote against their own best interest by thinking they're voting in their best interest by voting for the damn Democrats. Yeah, and you Democrats, you know, I'm getting wise to this here. Turn around and telling all of us that we are voting against our own best interest. Well, our best interest is not in getting freebies from the government. It's something you had best wake up to, because we have understood now at this point in time that the government has no freebies to give away. And anything the government is giving to us, it is taking away from someone. The fact of the matter is that the someone else that it is taking away from was giving us more than the government was. Yes, yeah, doesn't that sound pretty damn shitty? Yeah, we figured that out on you, you know, but these employers that you would keep robbing, keep saying, oh, geez, the rich, the insanely wealthy, you know, you know who the hell I'm talking about out there, the ones that you just want to continue to rape and burn and pillage, you know, and expect them to hang around and keep on producing so you can rape and burn and pillage even more, which are taking off, taking your jobs and everything going overseas, actually provide more for us than you goddamn Democrats sitting in Congress who rob from them and then turn around and say, here, we're providing for you. Well, no, you're not. They provide jobs, they provide products that make our lives easier, make our lives more productive. Sorry, you know, but we would prefer to do this on our own. We understand that societies and governments need not be mixed together anymore. Government is here to protect the rights of society to make its own determinations. That's it. That's the only form and function that government ever had. It's the only legitimate function that government has ever had. And it has to be returned to that. But society has to go about finding its own way. You know, I keep hearing cries from all you bastards out there about how wonderful it would be if we just had a little more socialism. You know, Well, I'm here to tell you something. Each and every one of you Sputniks out there that tells me this. There are a couple of social systems working in this country that you can go and feel free to join anytime you like. And they will gladly accept you. And you will like them. They are macrobiotic. They share and share alike. They don't do anything in excess. They don't use drugs. They drink very moderately. They don't go into any noisy celebrations. They don't go crazy. They all conform very nicely to a code of ethics that they all agree to. They keep everything in moderation. Keep it real nice. And any of you libtards out there that wants to live in a social structure that would provide all of your needs and wants and take whatever it is that you're willing to give them, go down to the Kingdom Hall and join the Jehovah's Witnesses. They are there. They will gladly embrace you. You may also, if you want to really try, go and find any of the Mormons. The Mormons may take you also. Not the Mormons. I'm sorry. I made a mistake there. Not the Mormons, but the Quakers. Or, what do you call them? The modern-day... Hey, here's my buddy Gary joined the room. What the hell am I trying? I'm thinking the Amish here, but it's not the Amish. It's the... one of the Amish relatives that worked themselves out, Mennonites or something along that line. From what I understand, they're still picking people up. You know, you can help yourselves. But those are social systems. You guys want to join a socialist system? There's the ones to join. You see, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. I also would invite you to go and start your own social system. I have no problem with that. You know, none whatsoever. If all you socialists out there want to get together with each other, shun the rest of us, and trust me, we will not mind if you shun the rest of us, and form your own social system where you all take care of each other and provide for each other and set your own rules, hey, God bless you. Feel free. Have at it. You know, we're not going to stop you. You know, we may praise you. May not be out willing to help you with it, but hey, if you got something you want to trade, well, you know, what you got for trade? What do you need? You know, we'll take each one of those on a case-by-case basis. But understand this, that is exactly why every single one of you hippie communes failed back in the 60s, all right? Because it came apparent at one point in time that there were things that the commune needed that the commune could not provide for itself and had to seek resources outside the commune and was unable to produce what they needed to trade to get those resources from outside the commune. And what did the commune find at that point in time? Well, they found out how it was that communism really worked. Because they did not have the power of government behind them to co-opt those resources at the point of a gun. They were forced to go out and trade for those resources, which meant they had to trade value for value. If there were things they wanted from outside that commune that weren't supplied by that commune, well, guess what? They had to go out and trade for it, which meant they had to produce something to give in trade. In order to get something in trade, and what they were producing for in trade didn't measure up to what they needed to get from the outside. And that's what a failed system is. And that's why all of you idiots out there need to understand that communism and socialism only works at the point of a gun. You know, and I'm here to tell you, it only works for so long, even, you know, even when it's agreed to. Somebody was pointing me today to an article that was written by the Bolivians down there, to where their redistribution of wealth and their shunning of capitalism, that they are raising the standard and blah 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 blah. Well, you know, it always works fine for the first few years. You know, Margaret Thatcher once said, yeah, socialism works fine until you run out of other people's money. Once you're out of that, once you've gotten beyond whatever goods or services that you had to trade, if you're not still producing those goods and services for trade, you don't have anything to trade now, do you? That's really what it's all about. At any rate, what it's all about right now is the fact that I'm at the bottom of the hour here. It's time to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You are listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Be right back, folks. I'm going to go to the next one.
If you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI. It was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL. Whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
And we're back, listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hertco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Boy, I am losing my voice. This cold is still doing it. Oh, thank you. I got a bit. Folks, I'm really starting to get suspicious about this. Now, I got to tell you a little story here. I never had the flu in my life. Not until 1981, in the service, when I got my first flu shot. And I'll tell you, I got the flu so bad after I got that flu shot that I thought I was going to die. Same thing happened every year for the next 5 years, as long as I continued to get those flu shots. After I got out of the service, I continued to get the flu every fall until about 1989. For some strange reason, those flu shots wore off, and I never got the flu again. But this year is different. I've been sitting here now. This is the funny part about it. I want to say it's almost walking pneumonia. I don't know what the hell is going on here. It has been a month. Now I've normally got a runny nose. I've always had a runny nose all my life, and I don't know if it's allergies or what it is. Blah 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 blah. It doesn't matter. Matter of fact, the only time I didn't have a runny nose was for the 8 months that I lived in Southern California, and I'm almost ready to move back there. For the last month here, myself and damn near everybody I know has got this upper respiratory infection, and legions of bombarding it with all sorts of antibiotics isn't doing a damn thing. Isn't putting a dent in it. Now, I'm against treating the symptoms. I always have been, because treating the symptoms is generally more of a nightmare than treating, dealing with the symptoms and waiting for things to go away. And I remember once, back in 88, 87, when I was still getting the flu, I had a doctor gave me this stuff called Entex. And I took one of those and went on a 24-hour anxiety attack. I don't ever want to do that again. It was no fun. So these drugs that they give you to dry it up, blah, 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 I would tend to avoid them. I'm not saying I'm all the way that far to the left, but look, I'm very natural into herbal healing and that kind of stuff, and believing that the body will cure itself if given time. But I'm almost starting to think here that this is some kind of a terrorist attack, because I just can't seem to shake it. And neither does anybody else I know that's got it seem to be able to shake it. It's funny, it's like all my friends have got this, my family, untouched. My wife, the kids, they're fine. They got no problems. It's insane. I don't understand. All right, upwards and onwards into the show here. Let's see. We got through the mail bombs, blah, 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 blah. There was one here on the front page of Yahoo News that I did want to get into. And I'm trying to stay away from... Yeah, we know that one. I don't know. Hey, this could be a quicker show than I thought of here tonight, because I am losing my voice at a rapid basis right here. Let's take a look. There was something maybe over in the AFP that I just had to get into here tonight. Let's see. Well, I already told you about the U.S. Weighing its options against a growing militant threat, and let's get into this a little bit. They're starting to talk here. Well, U.S. officials on Monday, this is by Dak DeLuch off the AFP. U.S. officials today weighed expanding operations in Yemen to hunt down al-Qaeda extremists who are blamed for a foiled bomb plot that experts say showed a high degree of sophistication. The plot disrupted last week after a crucial tip from Saudi Arabia put the spotlight on U.S. efforts to help Sana'a battle al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen amid speculation Washington might opt to step up missile strikes and covert operations. Now, the CIA and other spy agency services managed to prevent the attempted attack by acting on the Saudis' information. But officials remain anxious about al-Qaeda's finding fertile ground in Yemen's impoverished tribal landscape. The intelligence community has been focusing increasing its focus on Yemen for obvious reasons. This will continue to be the case, a U.S. official told AFP. Speaking on condition of anonymity, it's the same guy, you know who it is. My favorite buddy down there. I'm going to get down and find this guy one day. I'm going to take his picture and show you what he looks like. The Wall Street Journal reported that President Barack Obama's administration was considering placing CIA authority elite hunter-killer special operations teams that operate secretly in the country to track and kill al-Qaeda leaders. I wonder who he got that advice from. John Kerry starting to ring a bell. The Pentagon, however, strongly denied the report. Yeah, that's right, because there happens to be a few laws against that. There is nobody in a leadership position in the Defense Department who's given any serious consideration to the proposal outlined in that article, spokesman Brian Whitman told reporters. The U.S. military currently oversees a $155 million program to bolster Yemen's counterterrorism campaign, providing helicopters, equipment, and training by U.S. special forces, as well as widely reported missile strikes against militants. We work very closely with the government of Yemen on our assistance with respect to counterterrorism activities, Whitman said. But he added, you're not going to get me to talk about covert operations. Fine. Well, at least he's talking on condition of anonymity. To undermine al-Qaeda in Pakistan, the United States has dramatically expanded a CIA bombing campaign using unmanned aircraft. And analysts have suggested Obama might opt for a similar approach in Yemen. Given public resentment of U.S. policies, operation against al-Qaeda in Yemen are a sensitive subject among U.S. officials, who tend to downplay the American role there. Now, some commentators warned against relying on U.S. military assistance in Yemen and urged more development aid to prevent the country from becoming a failed state. Well, duh. You know, too much attention devoted, for example, to more military assistance or to allowing the CIA to operate its drone program in the country is likely to inflame the internal tensions that attracted al-Qaeda in the first place. Chris Buchek of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace wrote in the Financial Times. Now, Chris, let me tell you something, Chris. You know, you're going to sit down here and tell me that, you don't want us operating a drone program in the country. But by the same token, you don't want us to go in there with a big, huge one and just take over the country and do the right thing. But what you are trying to tell us here is that somehow or another, if we can lift the Yemeni people out of poverty and put them up on an economic standing, then all of a sudden, you're not going to have that kind of problem coming out of there anymore. Well, don't you get it, Chris? You know, Chris Buchek, don't you get it? All right, fact of the matter is here that you are right when it comes to the fact that an elevated economic standing will help. You know, no doubt about that. I've been saying that for 10 years. But the only way you're going to get an elevated economic standing is when you have a government that respects the rights of the people to determine their own self and their futures. When the rights of the people include self-determination, when they include life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then you have an increase in economic prosperity. And you also have peace. That's how it works, Mr. Cruz Buchek of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. You know, it's unbelievable, these lefties, you know, they somehow think that as long as there is a huge transferal of wealth from one country to the other, that somehow or another they are going to solve problems. Well, I'm sorry, but that shit just doesn't flush. It never did in the past, and it's not going to move in the future. It's that simple. It can't work. All right? What you have got to do if you're going to, you know, transfer anything over to them, what you want to transfer to them is liberty. You want to give them that right of self-determination. You want to allow them to have access to the rest of the world, to see how the rest of the world does things, so that they can copy them and move along. And then, once they start earning things for themselves, you allow them to keep what they're earning. Because when you do that, okay, they start to feel rich. And when they start to feel rich, they start to feel ambitious. They start to understand that, Jesus, the harder I work and the more I earn, the more I'm going to have. Wow, isn't that something? You know, and then if I can go in and get an education, I can earn even more and have even more. Wow, isn't that something? But that's how it works in the real world. Now, the rest of you utopian dreamers out there need but take one look. And that's right here at the country that you live in, this country that you condemn, you know, this country that you bitch about because of all the corporate interests, because of all the capitalism, because of all this and all of that. You know, but stop and think about it. You are free to bitch about it here, aren't you? And you're not going to hear anything but a tongue lashing from people like me. What happens in those countries? You know, it ain't the same thing now, is it? And why is it that you think these countries are so impoverished? It is because of the collectivism that has been present there from the beginning of time. All right? It is that simple. It's because of the abuse of power by the few that keeps the people put down. It's because there's a few people there who think that they know what's best for everybody and they just happen to be holding on to the reins of power. Now, let's face it, that's what's happened in this country over the last 4 years, proving themselves wrong. But what's the difference between here and there? Here, we can boot their asses out. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing tomorrow. Tomorrow, we will be kissing this Democratic Party goodbye. Personally, I'd like to think it's going to be gone forever. You know, it's a shame to say, because once upon a time, the Democratic Party was something that stood for something in this country. It really was. But not anymore. The Democratic Party has been so overcome by the progressives, been so overcome by the socialists, the communists, by the collectivists of the world, that you can't even recognize it as an American party anymore. You can't see it. You just don't know what the hell it looks like anymore. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, that's all going to end tomorrow. But in order for this stuff to happen overseas, things are going to have to change. They're going to have governments that respect the rights of the people, that uphold the rights of the people to have their own self-determination. It's the only way it's ever, ever, ever going to work. You know, and anything else that you sit down and try to work at us is just slapping a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. That's all you're doing. Now, let's wait and see how the Americans act with the amenities tomorrow. I don't know. I think it's, you know, what's going to happen down over the weeks here, I don't think it's going to be too much different. I really don't. Now, on top of that, Barack Obama here is extending economic sanctions on Sudan for at least 1 year, the White House said today, ahead of the country's January referendum on independence for the South. In a letter sent to members of Congress, Obama informed U.S. lawmakers that the sanctions on Khartoum, which were to have expired on Wednesday, would be extended, saying that the circumstances which led to their imposition some 13 years ago have not been resolved. Sudan's actions and policies, Obama wrote, are hostile to U.S. interests and pose a continuing, unusual, and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States. Therefore, I have determined that it is necessary to continue the national emergency declared with respect to Sudan and maintain enforced sanctions against Sudan and to respond to this threat, Obama wrote in his letter to Congress. The United States has banned virtually all trade with Sudan since 1997. The renewal of these tough sanctions comes at a time of great consequence for the people of Sudan and for the U.S.-Sudan relationship, White House spokesman Tommy Vietor said later on Monday. Sudan is on the U.S. sanctions list as an alleged supporter of Islamic militant groups and over the situation in its war-torn western region of Darfur, Vietor noted in his statement. If Sudan's government acts to improve the situation on the ground and advance peace, we stand ready to work with Sudan to ensure its rightful place in the international community, he added. Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department announced today that U.S. Envoy to Sudan, Scott Gratian, was in Khartoum in preparation for the vote and that he would soon depart for Addis Ababa for additional pre-referendum talks. The retired general last month presented a bleak view of preparations for the referendum in Africa's largest country. The vote is to be held under a 2005 peace deal to put an end to Africa's longest-running civil war between the North, which is mostly Arab-Muslim, and the predominantly Christian South. On the same day, voters in Ibei, a disputed oil region straddling the country's north and south, will make the same decision for their district. Northern and southern Sudanese leaders, however, have clashed over who is eligible to vote. The Mizariya, Arab nomads who use land in Ibei for seasonal pasture, have threatened to derail the referendum if they are not granted the same voting rights as the Dinka Nigok, who are settled farmers seen as favorable to joining the south. An estimated 1.5 people died in Sudan's long civil war between north and south, perishing directly in conflict or from disease and famine. Yeah, it's amazing. Well, we're going to wait and see what's going to happen over there, too, aren't we? This is a long-running thing. My money at this point in time, the Arabs are going to win this, folks. You know, like it or not, it will be the Islamics that win out because they are going. They are looking harder. They want, and I'll tell you what, I would almost put some money on this. This is coming up in January. And we'll see. We will see who wins the Stop One Arab. See how many more articles come out between now and then. It's like this general says, the situation over there looks bleak. And it's, you know, hey, what can you say? You're not going to get anybody in this country to jump into Darfur at this point in time, though. All right, what else we got cooking out there? Anything at all you folks would like to discuss here in the room tonight, feel free. Put your hand up, Mr. Presley, Mr. Fruit, Mr. Boomhead. You know, anything that's coming from down under or out west or any of the rest of this, anything you guys want to talk about in your local elections, feel free. Raise your hand. You can come on up to the mic, and we'll have some fun. All right. Yeah, and Obama's out there making an 11th-hour appeal to U.S. voters for tomorrow, which I think is falling on deaf ears. Most of these people are distancing themselves from him as far as possible he can be. All right. Now, what else have we got out there? I think they're pretty much covered here. I think we got the AFP down, and we got the top news out of the way. You know, Massachusetts, there's only one real thing I'm looking at tomorrow. I am looking to, like I say, go into the voting booth and vote the Democrats out. And, of course, I do that every year anyway. But one that we're really looking at up here is to end the double taxation on alcohol. I think it's pretty shitty. We've always had an excise tax on alcohol, so when you went into the store and you bought the alcohol, it was paid. You know, the when we buy the alcohol from a distributor, the retailer buys it from the distributor, he pays a tax on it. And, of course, that tax goes right into the cost of it when he sells it to the retailer. You know, it's an excise tax. Well, on top of that, they have added the state sales tax to the alcohol. And now, all of a sudden, people are bitching about it. Well, we got a chance to at least inform Congress that we want it repealed tomorrow. We will see how it works. Now, I warn all of you Massachusetts voters out there, please, go and vote for it. But don't expect too much. All right, because don't forget what happened here when we voted overwhelmingly to cut back the state income tax. You know, the referendum votes in the state of Massachusetts are not legally binding on Congress. The only way laws happen in our Congress is by the debate process and by having them voted on in both houses of Congress and signed into law by the governor. All right, that's the only way that a law can happen here. Despite the fact that those laws were run over with by our Supreme Judicial Court and Margaret Marshall on the issue of gay marriage, which is utterly ridiculous. It never happened. All right. With that, folks, I tell you what. We have, I think I'm going to cut her a little short here tonight. There is a football game on. And there's some medicinal whiskey downstairs that is begging my name to soothe my throat. So I think that's where I'm going to head. And we may end up calling it a night here. Calling it real simple. One thing you got to remember, folks, tomorrow is election day. Tomorrow is the ejection election. Get the hell out there and vote. If you know people that should be voting and aren't, go over there and drag them. Grab them right by the ear and take them with you. You know, make sure that you people get in there to vote tomorrow. And get the bums out. All right, with that, folks, it's going to be a good night from the Politics Cafe here at www.herncode.com. The best in Internet talk radio. See you next Monday night, folks. Hope I'm feeling better.